God is love, and at the beginning of time, God spoke into a formless void and created all things. Therefore, we can say that love speaks. And what does it say? Love whispers words of freedom to all people everywhere. This is Love Speaks, the podcast. Just two priests talking about life through the lens of the Sunday readings. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Come with us as we encounter the Word.
Happy feast day.
Yes, thank you. And welcome back. You know, it's been a few weeks.
Yeah, you know, we had a lot of reasons why we couldn't podcast, right?
Well, there were very important priestly reasons, and I'm not sure that the people of God would understand them. So we'll just leave it at that.
We'll leave a little bit of mystery.
That's right, a little bit of the supernatural. I think we'll be retained, which is good. Now, here's an image for you. Couldn't find my black cleric shirt this morning, so here I am in my undershirt. And couldn't find my regular headphones, so here I am in my Dan Fulvachny-issued PS4 headphones.
What are PS4 headphones?
You know, these gigantic things that, like, you look like you're, like, directing drones around Afghanistan. And they're giant and blue, and it has a little, it even has a little, like, microphone attached to it, which I'm not using, but they, like, cover, I'll put a picture of myself in these things in the show notes, maybe, but
I'm looking at Sony PS4 Gold wireless headset. Yeah, they look pretty much like earmuffs.
Yeah, they're gigantic earmuffs. But, like, I love it, because then I'm up here playing the games that I play, and
well, you got my voice in full surround, which is good.
Yeah, no, I feel like you're here behind me, as a matter of fact. Like, I feel like I'm at the desk, and you're kind of on the radiator behind me.
Brian!
Yeah, well,
did I scare you?
Whoa, yeah. Yeah, look, I turned around. I don't know if you heard me turn around, but I did. I did turn around. Hey, do you ever listen to PrayStation Portable?
You're listening to PrayStation Portable. This is Jimmy Akin of the Jimmy Akin podcast.
But that's not, you got to be more like whispery. He's so whispery.
This is Jimmy Akin
of the Jimmy Akin podcast.
You're listening to PrayStation Portable.
PrayStation Portable, the liturgy of the hours of the Roman Catholic Church. All right. Anyway, but I don't know who the guy is that does it. And believe me, I'm thankful that he does it, okay? I do it a lot in the car, etc. I'm not jiving against him here. But there have been so many times where you can hear, like, the lawnmower in the background or the cicadas in the background. God, come to my...
We had that issue in Three Dogs North very early on because we just had one mic in the middle of the group and it caught so much noise. And I tried to do noise canceling on Audacity, but there was one where it was so hot we had to have the windows open, and it was, locusts.
What are those locusts?
Going nuts.
I don't know what they are. Cicadas, locusts. But, like,
whatever.
But I mean, like, the, it just was so funny. Not so the wicked, not so.
And then you're always asking, is that on my end?
Well, yeah, exactly. But I'm, like, in the car. Like, I'm on, you know, 355 or whatever. And I'm like, is there a lawnmower, like, following me? Is the sod patch that I have growing in my trunk, is it being mowed right now?
There's one responsory to a reading that always sounds to me like he's starting some kind of drum circle. The cadence that he has. What is it again?
I don't know. I'll just say I never thought that before. It's the use of the psalm prayers and the weird pronunciation of all the questionably pronounced words that I have a trouble with. Like, is it impious or impious? Well,
is it Ophir or Ophir?
Ophir. Bashan, Bashan. I think for Zion, we sometimes get Zion. No. Anyway, okay, so we have 24 minutes because I have school mass.
Oh.
And I think, do you, every time you go celebrate mass, do you call it school mass?
Yeah, because I'm at school. Oh, sorry, guys. I have two school masses today for All Saints Day.
Wow, can you believe it?
Yeah.
All Saints Day. Okay, so it's been a couple weeks since we've been together, and I don't care really when this goes out, but I'm thinking today about the readings for this coming Sunday, which is the 30th Sunday in Ordinary Time. I hope that's okay with you.
The 30th Sunday? That's last week.
I mean the 31st Sunday.
Dang it, I looked at this 32nd Sunday.
Well, now you're prepared, but I have to admit, so I'm preaching at the Diocesan Red Mass on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? I don't know, but I am.
Is that firefighters or what?
I was going to make a joke, but I can't think of one. It's like lawyers and judges. Oh, and
right.
So I'm preaching about justice. But anyway, we might not even get to that. I want to read to you. Can I read to you, Father Connor?
Mm-hmm.
This is from a book called Beat Not the Poor Desk by Walter Wengren. You ever heard of him?
Mm-mm.
He's a writer. PlayStation Portal would pronounce it Walte Wangeren. So he's it's a book to people who say that they want to write. And it's like tips on how to be a good writer. But anyway, he says, if you say to me, I want to be a writer, I will ask you why. Okay, so here he is, chapter 2, talking about art, writing as an art. He says, art is an act, a process. In order to be complete, writing requires a reader. Art occurs, it happens. It is always an event rather than an object. It is a verb, not a noun, though it is by means of nouns that art takes place. Art is its own peculiar form of human communication. As such, the complete event is divided into two parts. First, the artist acts. And then he talks about Rembrandt painting the picture of St. Paul in prison, that after long preparation, Rembrandt learns his craft, he lives his life consciously, unconsciously, he earns lifelong wisdom, and then he goes into a studio alone and he does his thing. As long as the painting hangs in the dark room of a closed museum, the process is only half finished. Its second half begins when we come in daylight and look and enter the world of Rembrandt's imagined prison cell, and that's when we begin to act. In a kind of spiritual motion, step by step, we peer deeper into the painting. We may start with the apostle's entire body. He sits in a disheveled robe, the source of light outside the frame. Next, we may follow his finger, which points to the book on his lap through Paul's. Although Paul's eyes are up, he's not reading. But we read, and so we discover that the book is a Bible, and that his finger is on a particular passage in the Bible, etc. So then, he says, the two distinct acts make a whole. So he talks about art being a verb, not a noun, and that the verb, the action of art, has two parts. One is the artist's creation of the art, and the second is our appreciation of the art. Not value appreciation, but the verb of that. You know what I mean? Like our going mm-hmm. to it and looking at it. So anyway, I've been thinking lately about my vocation, my priesthood as art in that light. That, like, I don't know, I've always been taught that priesthood is something that happens to me. You know, like priesthood is someone that I become. It's not something ultimately that I choose. I mean, I choose to go through with it, but the wand chooses the wizard, Harry. And so I think it's something like that, you know, where I really have this deep sense that this
and
is...
And then the second half of that is the people receiving it?
Well, so we could look at it that way, the people receiving my priesthood, or you have in one sense like the artist. Oh, I just got a text from the school secretary that she grabbed me a coffee for All Saints Day. Wow. That like the artist maybe is God, and that I'm the one now beholding this thing. I like it's hard for me to imagine me as a priest. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was just watching with my sister last night the movie The Brothers Bloom. You ever seen that?
Nope.
But oh, before I forget, I remember what that response tree was. As I was half listening to your whole quote about art, our hearts are filled with wonder as we contemplate your works, O Lord.
Oh yeah, oh mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our hearts are filled with wonder as we contemplate your works, O Lord. Lord. I always end up beating the steering wheel to a drum when I hear that.
Like Rob Johnson with his claves in your last podcast.
Yeah, you know what I love about you, Father Ryan, is you're a loyal listener.
Yeah.
To all podcasts.
Yeah, I'm a huge podcast person.
That's great.
But I like your pod. I usually go, actually yesterday, I went right from Praise Station Portable with Jimmy Akin all the way to Three Dogs North.
Hmm. Full gamut.
And let me tell you, I was aching. Oh. Anyway, sorry.
The Brothers Bloom, you ever seen it? Adrian Brody and Mark Ruffalo are brothers, Bloom, and they're con artists. Anyway, it's sort of a Wes Anderson feel, a little bit of an otherworldly sense to it. Funny and very dry and kind of high-level sarcasm. But very good movie. But it's about that, like where the younger brother, they're sort of orphans that move from town to town, foster family to foster family, and they never really belong anywhere. And the way that the older brother gets the younger brother to kind of engage life, because he's so in his shell, never feels like he belongs, is that he writes long cons for them to be a part of that involve him basically doing normal stuff like talking to girls and going to parties and traveling the world and things like that. So throughout their life, they develop this persona, and it starts in their adult life after explaining the background with Adrian Brody's character, the younger brother, wanting to get out. And I guess that's been the constant theme through their life together, is that he wants a real life, not a written life, not a fake one, where the only reason he's interacting with people is because he's conning them. And they're friendly. They're not mean con artists. They're just, you know.
I get it.
Fun con artist.
Believe me, I get it.
But anyways, without ruining
not the movie, that I'm a con artist. Okay.
The conner is my name.
Oh man, you're a real conner.
Mm-hmm. I'm aching to do some conning.
We're gonna take a commercial break because I need to go vomit.
Anyways, it's all about the unwritten life. He wants an unwritten life or unscripted life. But at the end, without ruining it, it kind of, the conclusion is that you want your life to be a story, and there is no such thing as an unwritten life, just a badly written life.
Hmm.
Which I thought was a pretty good line. Still don't really understand what that means. You know, I know that God is writing a story with my life, but you know, it does. I feel like sometimes I have this fantasy that my life should have a soundtrack. That's why I wear earbuds sometimes and listen to music and
write music about people running to a bus stop.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's another purpose of art, I feel like, is just to your point about Rembrandt's painting, is that only through seeing something through somebody else's eyes do you actually start to notice and see things, you know, like the human body is this beautiful form, but until somebody sculpts it out of stone, you don't really appreciate it, you know. But then you start looking at all the details and you say, like, wow, this looks like a real person. But you see real people all the time. Why is the sculpture so much more amazing? There's something about the artistry of it. I don't know, what does it have to do with the readings though?
Well, you need to let me build my case here.
Okay.
How's that sound? It really doesn't, I don't think. But those are just the readings that I was thinking of, because that was another thing that I wanted to talk about. But, let me see here. Another example that he uses of this kind of art is the cathedral at Chartres, which of course is Bishop Barron's like headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
But he just talks about how, like, so art is something that someone else proposes and that you like take in, you know? And I don't know, I just got to thinking like, well, I feel like all I do all day is propose, this is the connection, that all I do all day is propose to people like the truth of the gospel and propose to people these two commandments, you know?
Mm.
And they take them or they don't, but they, like, the only way that I've ever been able to interact with God, I guess, is by, not with God, well, yeah, with God, but, like, come on, Father Ryan, is in, like, the concrete, like, Giussani talks about Jesus coming and acting in the concrete vicissitudes of our life, okay, in the concrete moments and instances and, like, actual experiences of our lives, and that that's how we come to know him. And so the only way that I understand what those two commandments means, like, is insofar as I have been in situations and have not experienced either love of God or love of neighbor. And so all I can do is propose. And that made me just, that made me think about this reading. Like, so an artist comes along and he proposes, like Rembrandt proposes St. Paul in prison, and he doesn't paint it for me necessarily. And the guy goes on, of course, to talk about how, like, if you're going to write something, you know, unless you're like journaling, but even then, when, like, when you journal, you always have in mind, like, I always think about the people who will read my journal while I'm in the process of being canonized, you know? And like, so I, but that affects what I write then, you know? Like, sometimes I'll censor what I write, like, oh, shoot, if I write that, then they'll think I'm not worthy to be a saint. So, today was a great day, and I levitated, and I hit the ceiling 50 times, and now that's why I have a bruise, you know? St. Ryan of Joliet was so bruised by his times, bumping to and fro against the ceiling of the rectory, that he needed hospitalization on numerous occasions. This is Franciscan Media's Saint of the Day, St. Ryan of Joliet, a parochial vicar bruised and killed by hitting the ceiling during frequent levitations. Our hearts are filled with wonder as we contemplate the words. So,
you're talking about the Heisenberg uncertainty cat.
Not sure what that is, but let me finish my thought because I'm on a roll. So this idea then of like what I propose to the world is either accepted or not accepted. What God has proposed to the world is in the forms of his two commandments is either accepted or it's not accepted, you know? But like, it's not complete unless it's accepted or rejected. It's not complete unless it's encountered and interacted with. And so that's just kind of been the fodder of my prayer lately regarding the priesthood. That's what I mean. Like, the priesthood is something that's been proposed to me over these last 5 months, last Friday. And now, like, I'm interacting with it for the first time. And you could even argue, like, in seminary, I watched it being painted for 7 long years. I watched Rembrandt paint my priesthood. And now I'm finally able to behold the thing. And even though I watched it be painted, I have no clue what it is. You know, it's like as if I'm like looking at it for the first time. Because I might go see St. Paul, I might go see him in prison, or the painting of him in prison that Rembrandt painted. And then I might go to a prison, and I might see men in prison. And then I'll look at the painting again and think like, oh man, what? Or like, I might think about all the times that like a certain family member of mine, for example, has been in prison. And then I'll think about, you know what I mean? Like, then the concrete vicissitude of my life will affect the way that I see it differently. And like, it might become new to me all the time. So on the one hand, it fills me with kind of discouragement, like, oh shoot, like I'll never understand what my life is about. But then it kind of fills me with encouragement because like, I'll never understand what my life is about. It will always be new. I don't know. Those are just the things that I've been thinking about. And, like, how do I live out the priesthood? Well, I live out the priesthood the same way that the banker lives out the banking life and the mommy lives out the mommy life. Not that banking is a vocation. I don't mean that. Well, it might be. But anyway, like, I have to accept, I have to encounter these commandments. I have to encounter Jesus saying, love me, love them. And then I got to do it. And it's just, like, it seems so simple to me on the outside. Okay. I think that's the end of my diatribe.
It's good. It's really good. I'm still thinking about art for some reason, but I think that what affects me about art, I went to the Art Institute a few weeks ago, and what really struck me was these statues, neoclassical 1800s, artists trying to revive the classical way of doing sculpture. And nice, dude. It's a great picture.
Yeah, thank you.
And there was one in particular, the daughter of Jephthah, I want to say. It's a biblical virgin who was had to be killed at some point in the Bible, maybe Judges or something. And it's just, it looks like a teenage girl sitting in a gown with a lacy veil, but it's all carved out of stone. And it was awesome in the old sense of awe-inspiring. Just looking at how this veil, you feel like you could flip it, you know, with a, your pinky, because it, it's so delicate looking, but it's carved out of literal stone.
I'm looking at it here on the old Google.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course I took pictures of it. As I sneered at everyone else taking pictures of every painting and not really beholding them, I was so moved by this one that I took several pictures of it. And that just doesn't do it. It has to be beheld in living stone. Yeah. But I guess what it makes me feel is more human when I look at something like that, because I'm reminded that there are other subhuman subjects out there, some of whom have this gift of making particular forms of art. But it's the truly useless thing, but it's really only, like, what did the priest from Les Miserables say about his patch of flowers, that the it was like his only useless plot?
Yeah.
And his sister was accusing him of that, of wasting space, not growing food. And he goes, oh, don't you know that beauty is the only really useful thing, or something like that? I can't remember how he says it very cleverly, but it is true. Without stuff like that, everything else passes away, you know? I feel like sometimes, to your point about your journals, that writing things like songs and stories or making art, even the podcast to some extent, I feel is like a thing that you'll leave and people can still know you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've left an expression of yourself that's outside of yourself. Like you've made something other that now will last, even though it's not like a communication device or a cotton gin or some useful thing. It's just a piece of you you've left, or a piece of the world that has been filtered through your human freedom and intellect and will. And I don't know if this is what you were getting at, but you know, the artless life or the artless world is a world devoid of meaning and really devoid of God at the end of the day, which to me is like the antinomian, which we're not really not antinomian in the secular age. We're highly nomian, but it's just our laws are kind of arbitrary. They move with the winds of trends and popular opinion about what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. But God has this utterly fixed and high bar of love, infinite love, as the law. And it has certain concrete expressions that the church has put out. But I guess the overall feel...
Can we have a commercial break just before you move?
Sure.
Antinomianism is any view which rejects laws or legalism and is against moral, religious, or social norms. And we're back with Father Connor.
Yeah, I was reading... I finished this week The Hideous Strength.
Right. Woo-hoo, yeah.
And his sarcastic critique of the whole basically modern rationalist worldview is so biting. It's crazy. You know, like, it's just the logical... this guy Frost is sort of the logical product of materialism. And, like, the only thing worth our time is material progress. the only knowledge that's real is empirical.
Yeah.
What that ends up doing is painting the picture, as it were, of a meaningless universe.
Yeah.
And
it's like modern art.
Very good. Yeah.
You've painted a picture of a red square.
It has no meaning. It has no claritas or integritas. It's just there. It's just a blech. And that's what human life ends up looking like in a lawless world. And then you look out at the world and you're like, well, there's no God in it. And then it's just depressing and boring. And Newman talks about this. Like, you, in a fallen world, you do look out and you think, even though I know God to exist through my conscience and through just the evidence of my intellect, like, why is there anything? Why is there something rather than nothing? There must be God. But you have to constantly remind yourself of that, because when you walk around in the world, the fact that so many people ignore him, or even that I ignore him on a regular basis, forget that he's there, makes it seem like this is just a world with no God in it, you know, or a world with no meaning in it. But I guess my point about art is that it sometimes, when it does what it's supposed to do, it jars you out of that malaise and reminds you that, oh yeah, we're all made in the image of God. And there's no other animal that sits around sculpting. There's no monkeys making monkey sculptures of famous, you know, women from the monkey scriptures. We're the only ones that do that. And why do we do that? Why do we have to be creative and take the given world and just clarify it and lift it up and elevate it and transcend it? And that's what the law of love, I think, is all about, is that animals are incapable of love because they're not subjects. They might have affection. And even in that Hideous Strength, he has that bear character who's been tamed.
Yeah.
And he has a whole kind of exploration of his inner life, which is funny, but it's also illuminating. Like, the bear doesn't love the woman who feeds him. He's just has affection for her. It's just habitual and Pavlovian, but that doesn't make it doesn't make him selfish, because he can't be selfish. He's not a human being. He can't use a person instead of loving them. That's just what he's capable of doing. Yeah, I've been thinking about that kind of stuff too. One thing that struck me too last night that I was kind of hoping to talk about, that really, I don't know if this connects, it might, I'll just have to think out loud, but something from the meditation actually in the Magnificat for next week's readings, about the widow's mite, says, I don't know who wrote this, it might just be the Magnificat editor, about because the first reading is the widow of Zarephath with her jar that never goes empty.
Yeah.
Says, the jar of flour shall not go empty, for it has become the bread of life, Jesus, who provides for those who make their lives a of self. I guess what I've, in my 4 years of priesthood and change, that's kind of what I've come to, is that this doesn't make any sense unless you make your life a total gift of self to him. And in him to his people. We get paid money. We have days off. We have freedom and possessions and things like that. And that's all fine and good. So long as it's used for God and making your life a gift to him. But it's very easy in the priesthood and probably any life to just reserve a lot of your life force and self and resources to service of the ego, and not totally give yourself away. And that cheats Jesus out of the right and prerogative to write the story of my life.
Yeah. It's not just on your part. This is what I preached about at this Red Mass. I'm going to preach about, I guess, at this Red Mass, that, like, the only way to... Yeah, it's... I don't know. That's what you owe him.
Yeah.
He's done what he owes you.
Well, it's what I owe him, but it's also like I'm cheating myself too.
Yeah.
Because I'm so boring. I'm not as good an artist as him.
You'll never be as fulfilled as you could be. You'll never be as artsy as you could be. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, like you won't be a saint.
Huh?
Unless you totally give yourself away.
Yeah.
The human being is a question to himself. It's like, what am I here for? Who am I going to give this thing to, this life I have? It has to be given away. And we end up giving it to dumb things, you know, or trying to take instead of give.
That's, yeah. I heard a definition of original sin recently that original sin is the tendency to take what is meant to be received.
Mm. Who said that? Do you remember?
Deacon Keating.
Yeah.
Deacon Keating.
I might be quoting someone, but I've heard that before.
Yeah. Well, there's a great, and I got to go, but there's two. Alana Boudreau has that song Petros,
mm-hmm.
where she says, if I could give you just one tiny thing, it would be my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Or my own life, I think she says. If I could give you, if I could give you just one tiny thing, yeah, it would be my own life. And then there's, I have a friend from college who has become now a sister of life. And before she could enter, she had to pay off her student loans. And to do that, she recorded an album of just like this awesome acoustic music. And gosh, I hope I still have that album. I got to find it. But she wrote a song called Kateri's Song, based on St. Kateri of Tekakwitha. And like in her pure sister of life voice, she sings like, I think it's, my life is not my own. I've given myself to Jesus. My life is not my own. I've given myself to him. And I don't know, I find myself humming that. My life is not my own. I have given myself to Jesus. My life is not my own. I've given myself to him. It's like the most simple melody ever.
Mm.
But I just love humming it, especially when I'm like frantic or whatever. Just like because it reminds me that all of this is not, I mean, it's arduous and it's scary and it's fearful and hard, but it's not that difficult really. And there's a lot that goes into it, of course, but my life is not my own. I've given myself to him. Okay.
Our hearts are filled with wonder as we contemplate your works, O Lord.
There it is. You know? There it is.
Who brought us this episode this week?
Well, Mattress Firm, as we know, closed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not closed yet, but it's on its
closing.
Way.
That's
yeah,
sad.
It's closing, yeah.
I just bought
They filed for bankruptcy, I guess.
Wow.
So this...
Is it Casper Mattress and all them, probably?
I don't know.
We're not sponsored by them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could say that this episode was sponsored by Jackie, the girl on my cup, and Joliet Catholic Academy Volleyball.
And Heisenberg's Uncertainty Cat.
That's right. Who is not up for adoption. All right, Father Connor, happy All Saints Day.
All right, Father Ryan, happy All Saints Day.
I have to celebrate Mass today for our chancery staff, so what's that all about?
Well, enjoy.
I think next time we should start a segment called What's That All About? That's kind of what just came into my head. And then finally, in the show notes, I will put pictures of both the daughter of Jephthah, but then also I want you to see The Veiled Christ. Have you ever seen him? By Giuseppe San Martino. It's in Naples. It's exactly the same thing that you're talking about. It's carved out of solid marble, but it looks like he's covered with an actual piece of cloth. It's beautiful. Okay, God bless you, everyone out there, and bye.
Bye. Bye.